This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and joining us now, one of the reigning power couples in the opera and musical theater world, Elliot Goldenthal, is a composer of concert, stage, and film music, won an Oscar for his score to the film Frida. Julie Taymor is the first woman to win a Tony as Best Director for the Broadway mega hit The Lion King. She's also a designer and puppet artist who created the 2004 staging of Mozart's The Magic Flute for the Metropolitan Opera. Together, Elliot Goldenthal and Julie Taymor have created the opera Grendel, which tells the Beowulf saga through the eyes of the monster itself. Grendel got its local premiere Tuesday as part of the Lincoln Center Festival. There are additional performances taking place tonight, Saturday, and Sunday. It is a pleasure to have both Elliot and Julie here with us on Soundcheck. To the two of you, welcome.
Thank you.
And congratulations. This has been a long time in the making. Julie, it is a genuine collaboration between the two of you, right?
Oh, absolutely. He does the music, and I work as a director on the libretto with another librettist, J.D. McClatchy, and then also direct it and work with the designers.
So who first had the idea 20 years ago that Grendel, and specifically the John Gardner novel, would make a good opera?
It goes back prior to that. We had that idea in the mid-70s, and then we met in the early 80s, and we both thought that it was appropriate subject to bring to the opera stage.
Mm-hmm. And 20 years later, it's finally here. Not without, you know, some difficulty along the way, obviously getting somebody to produce it. Elliot, you had an accident
six
months ago, so that delayed things even more?
Not really. It couldn't, because it was reaching the solemn curfew. I had to finish the work, so no matter what, brain dead or not, I had to finish it.
Uh-huh. But you're doing much better these days?
No, I'm fine. You know, okay. Stammer a little bit, but it hasn't affected my musical talent or lack thereof.
Or sense of humor thereof.
Yeah. Now, Julie, you've described Grendel as a kind of a reinterpretation of the monster hero myth. I mean, that's basically what Gardner was doing in the novel, right?
Yes, exactly. It is a 20th century, even though we're in the 21st century now, viewing of mankind in all his horror and glory. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful to take a legend like Beowulf and twist it on its head, on its ear, because we are just not used to that perspective. And even looking at the films that have been coming out, The Lord of the Rings, The Troy, The King Arthur's, all of these that have been coming out in the recent years, they're still the age-old hero worship myth. And I think looking at the state of our society now and how our enemies are so important to us, to look at this story from the enemy, quote-unquote, point of view is much more current and much more exciting for me.
Well, the Dalai Lama has said, you know, hold your enemies close.
Exactly. They are.
I mean, it's possible that, you know, a lot of the trouble in the world is people's inability to see shades of gray and to see things as black and white. Grendel is a very gray character.
Well, he's both horrific because he is a murderer by birth. He is born to be the monster.
Well, predator,
yet it's,
you know,
it, what?
He's a predator.
He's a predator. He has, like every animal, to come up every spring and look for food, look for people to eat. But on the other hand, he really is the human being. He really is us. He's trying to figure out why he's been given this lot in life, as we human beings are constantly searching and looking for meaning.
Well, Elliot, I guess one of the challenges of this is, I mean, Grendel, the character of Grendel, sung by Eric Owens, he's on stage the whole time.
And 2.5 hours.
So you have a delicate balance to maintain there between action, dramatic action, the arc of the story, and the fact that you can't wear this guy out. You need him for the next night's performance,
also,
too.
Also, wearing the sonic presence of bass baritone out for the audience. So because Grendel has an inner monologue, and most of the time he's conversing with himself, and Gardner makes reference to shadows. I thought it would be neat, and Julie also, that we had three additional ancillary characters, a trio of additional bass, a baritone, and a tenor, which can provide a sonic relief for the audience and respite for Grendel.
Well, I think in this excerpt we're about to hear, we have Eric Owens, who is Grendel, mm-hmm. and then towards the end of this short clip, we begin to hear those three voices, those three shadow Grendels, as you call them. Okay. It's music from Elliot Goldenthal, the composer, Julie Taymor, the director. They have collaborated on this opera called Grendel, and they're here with us today on Soundcheck. All right, well, you heard Eric Owens in the title role from the opera Grendel by Elliot Goldenthal and Julie Taymor, both of whom are with me in the studio. Elliot wrote the music. Julie, you worked on the libretto with J.D. McClatchy,
yes.
and obviously overseeing the way the opera looks. From what Elliot was saying about these three shadow Grendels, there's an unavoidable kind of psychological component to the way Grendel is portrayed, both in the original novel by John Gardner and, I would guess, in this opera.
Well, he, as I was saying earlier, he is an intellectual monster. He's a monster who has brains, who gets attracted to beauty, gets attracted to art, gets swayed by religious fervor, and yet he's part of the mechanics of the universe. So he's locked in what he calls it, locked in a deadly progression of moon and stars. And he is the outsider.
Mm-hmm.
So that is really, I love what the language says about him. He's the earth rim roamer, walker of the world's weird wall. He's observing humanity from the edge. He'll never be invited to the party. And in that sense, he's trying to figure out why he's considered the outsider.
Now, you have these characters who are half mythic beasts and half very human. Mm-hmm. Then you have other characters, as in many of your productions, who are puppets. Now, what do you get out of using puppets of various shapes and sizes that you don't get from the fully human cast, which is clearly at your disposal there on stage?
Well, it's all mostly a human cast. It's we have 20 dancers, 14 or so principals, 47 or 48 chorus members. I use puppets to play with scale, because Grendel, when he's human scale and the people are attacking him, if a 6 foot tall dancer attacks a 6 foot tall singer, you don't understand it. So we play with the idea of making miniature human beings to create the scale play of the monster. And we are forced as an audience to identify with Grendel as a human, because he is a human scale. Then at other times, when the people were inside the Mead Hall and you see 20 or 47 chorus members there and they've see the monster coming, we use a 14-foot tile puppet that resembles Grendel, but it's very stylized. It's almost a shadow. It's his overcoat floating with a monster mask, because it's the, for them, they see more of a monster. They don't see the human being. So you get not just scale play, but you get meaning in the puppets. I always try and look for a certain level of symbolism or meaning when I create a puppet. There's a reason it's two-dimensional or it's three-dimensional. There's a reason to go with having them be small and nasty like a bunch of mosquitoes biting at him.
We're speaking with Elliot Goldenthal, the composer, Julie Taymor, the director and librettist, and talking about the opera Grendel. So the two of you created a monster, although perhaps not the one you set out to create. And I'm referring now to the infamous wall. A big lot of... this was the occasion of so much press
It was coverage. A publicity stunt. It was to get all these suckers from the newspapers
to sell tickets.
Yeah,
anybody was writing about for a while was the wall didn't work.
But it
worked perfectly the first time we performed the idea. Think of it, not comparing myself or the art form, but Frank Gehry creating a building.
Right.
It's due to open up on the 18th, but it has a elevator misfunction. So they delay it a day or two, and then the buildings are open, and everybody writes about the elevator.
Yeah.
Right.
So much for the mentality of the press.
Yeah, so much for it. I mean, honestly, it's kind of a shame, and I really mean that, because we postponed one day for the reasons of safety, and because the computer wasn't working as soon as it was supposed to, we got delayed in getting our tech done. Then we had one day of rehearsal after what we turned into a dress rehearsal and opened. Mm-hmm. And it's worked perfectly, knock on wood, ever since. So a lot of stuff, of nonsense, you know.
But what is the overall function of the wall? I mean, there's
a very simple piece of scenery. When you actually see it, mm-hmm. you'll see that there is I think George Siepen, mm-hmm. the designer, has done a very elegant job of designing what was supposed to be a minimalist set. That's what's so annoying about the paper, because it's a minimalist set that functions for everything. It's the wall is the symbol that separates Grendel from the being. It's the wall that he climbs and watches from. It becomes the interior wall of the Mead Hall. It's the ice wall. What I wanted as a director was a very simple set. So, yes, everything, the scenery is the wall. There is no other scenery.
Right, but it rotates.
It rotates. Has an ice side and below the earth from the perspective of roots. Mm-hmm. And we both wanted to avoid a lot of scenery rolling in and out.
Yeah.
Because we just want to maybe make the set just disappear. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to think about, you know, crews rolling in stuff,
right,
you know.
Right.
Or we didn't want to be literal with all of the myriad settings. So, you know, you're inside Mead Halls, under the earth, above the earth, in the stars, in caves, on snowy. It's written as the novel is. And so you needed to have one simple concept that would be able to take in all of these locations. And so it's ironic that there's been too much attention.
Yeah.
It works very well. And really well.
Yeah.
And it's the quietest set I ever heard.
Well, now, speaking of technology, I mean, Elliot, any use of electronics in the score?
Yes. There is, out of 74 musicians, there's some synthesized music, handmade, homemade samples that are used, two electric guitars with many settings.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to hear. It's in blending in so much that you wouldn't readily hear anything that's electronic.
So there is this kind of sheen or patina of electronics that sometimes can be heard in the moment.
I don't know. Sometimes it's more a gnarly, earthy sound.
Yeah.
It depends on the scene.
Yeah, it's an edge.
Scene.
I don't think you don't feel it as electronic as much as the gnarly is the good word, really edgy.
Yeah. What about, Julie, I mean, you know, you've done the Magic Flute for the Metropolitan Opera, so you've worked in a major opera house mm-hmm. before. Have you found opera houses becoming more open to kind of experimental ways of presenting stories and things like that?
Well, I only know my own experience. I've done 6 operas in various houses. I did Salome for Valery Gergiev in Russia and Germany. My first was the Oedipus Rex I did for Seiji Ozawa, the Stravinsky and Saito Kinin Festival in Japan. And all of them have been with George Siepen, the set designer, and they're all non-representational sets. They're all stylized. They're all highly theatrical, very unusual and not so easy to create or put on. I think when people ask me to do a production, I would presume they would want me and my collaborators to do whatever we can do, you know, and so it's always wonderful to get that support. And that went from the Met to the LA Opera, Lincoln Center. They all were interested.
Right.
We were very well supported in that sense.
It just strikes me that in working on Broadway and in the opera, you have done a lot of really interesting work in two sort of media that have a reputation for being very conservative, mm-hmm. very reluctant to embrace change, and somehow you've made your way in both of those fields.
I don't find the Met, is that conservative?
No, I think the Met does pretty out. I actually found before I worked there that the productions I saw there that I was attracted to.
Lady Macbeth
at Matensk, and then,
the Shostakovich
of course,
Opera.
My God. And the I think the War and Peace was extraordinary. I found them more interesting productions than Broadway. I think you're more right about Broadway. I haven't seen that many revolutionary, extraordinary productions on Broadway. I think it's a little, you know, I've only done one real Broadway production. You know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Green Bird, Elliot and I did off-Broadway and out at La Jolla and brought on Broadway, but it was really an off-Broadway production moved up to a Broadway house.
I'd like to add that I work with George Siepen at the Met for my premiere of the ballet Othello. So I saw how the Met audiences responded to his work, and it was very favorable for the need for simplicity of a set that's not many desperate and an odd pieces being rolled in.
Well, Elliot, I mean, you know, we're talking about how people sort of perceive Broadway or the mm-hmm. opera. In the field of classical music, and this might be a specifically American perception problem, because in Europe it's almost the opposite, but composers who make a name for themselves in Hollywood doing film scores, often it seems like other composers sort of feel like that's not at the same level as concert music. Now, you've done both. In doing your concert works, have you ever run into anything like
that?
Oh,
so certainly there's oily, slimy, kind of snob, moldy, old style, pre-modern slant from critics. But
I don't think composers feel that way.
Composers
don't.
Growing up in New York, my teachers was John Corigliano and Aaron Copland, who won an Oscar, you know, for The Heiress, et cetera. And it's incredibly rewarding. That's what attracts the Philip Glasses, the Tom Dunes, myself, and Dreyer. It's a wonderful arena to experiment.
Well, it's also a way to tell a story in music.
And it's drama, is it not? I mean, if you can tell it through a movie with the underscoring, you're understanding how to construct story.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that you know we have to realize is, where does a composer get the playground of 100 musicians? You can't go out there and learn your craft in the everyday world of concert music. There aren't enough grants around there. So
Prince Esterhazy is dead.
Yeah, they're dead. And I assure you, Wagner would have been writing film scores and making movies beyond doing opera if he were living. All of them would, because it's a medium that entices any artist.
Well, it is, again, a storytelling medium. Mm-hmm. So the story being told tonight, Saturday and Sunday night, is that of Grendel. And the performances take place at the New York State Theater as part of the Lincoln Center Festival, with music by Elliot Goldenthal, directed by Julie Taymor, both of whom have been my guest on Soundcheck. Julie, Elliot, a real pleasure having both of you here
Thank
in the
you.
Studio. Thanks very much.
Thank you.